Hello and welcome to Oxtalk for Tuesday the 7th of May 2024. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Elizabeth Dale and Di Shaw and recorded at home by Elizabeth Dale and Rosemary Shergold. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 5:24 a.m. and sunset is at 8:39 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on May the 7th in history. In 1663, the Theatre Royal opened in London, built by the dramatist Thomas Killigrew for his company of actors and now commonly known as the Drury Lane Theatre. It is the oldest English theatre still in use. In 1765, HMS Victory, the ship which became the flagship of British Admiral Horatio Nelson, was launched at Chatham. The ship is now preserved at Portsmouth. In 1945, a German delegation went to US General Dwight D. Eisenhower's headquarters in Reims, France, and signed the surrender documents that ended the European phase of World War II. In 2014, an international league table, the Better Life Index, showed that people in Britain were 24% more likely to go out of their way to help a stranger than the average inhabitant of the world's other leading industrial countries. Born on this day in 1840, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky, Russian composer of the Romantic period, born in Votkinsk, Russia. He was the first Russian composer whose music would make a lasting impression internationally. Tchaikovsky wrote some of the most popular concert and theatrical music in the current classical repertoire, including the ballets Swan Lake and The Nutcracker, the 1812 Overture, his first piano concerto, violin concerto, the Romeo and Juliet Overture Fantasy, and several symphonies, and the opera Eugene Onegin. In 1901, Gary Cooper, American actor born Frank James Cooper in Helena, Montana, known for films such as High Noon, Sergeant York, and For Whom the Bell Tolls, he won the Academy Award for Best Actor twice and had a further three nominations. Cooper was one of the top 10 film personalities for 23 consecutive years, and one of the top money-making stars for 18 years. In 1919, Maria Eva Duarte, better known as Eva Perón or by the nickname Evita, was born in the rural Argentine village of Los Toldos. A political figure who, as the wife of President Juan Perón, became a powerful though unofficial leader. Her life was immortalized by Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber in their musical Evita. And deaths on this day. In 1925, William Hesketh Lever, also known as Lord Leverhulme, English industrialist, philanthropist and politician who created a large business empire. The first branded product he developed was Sunlight Soap, and other well-known Lever brands include Lux and Lifebuoy. The Leverhulme Memorial stands in Port Sunlight, Wirral, Merseyside. It's a model village that was constructed to house the workers at the Lever Brothers soap factory. In 1947, Harry Gordon Selfridge Sr., American retail magnate who founded the London-based department store Selfridge's. At the height of his success, Selfridge leased Highcliffe Castle in Hampshire. He is buried at St. Mark's Church in Highcliffe. In 2000, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., distinguished American US Navy pilot, actor and producer, probably best known for starring in such films as The Prisoner of Zenda, Gunga Din and The Corsican Brothers. Now on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
The Blenheim Palace Triathlon is anticipating a record turnout this summer as it celebrates its 20th anniversary. The event in Woodstock will take place on the weekend of June 1 to 2 and has already sold out for two of its most popular distances, with entries remaining strong across the rest of the weekend. The 2023 event saw nearly 5,000 people take part, including household names such as BBC Radio 2 presenter Joe Wiley. Entries for 2024's Saturday Sprint and Sprint Team Relay events are now sold out, meaning the only remaining way to compete on the Saturday is through the Super Sprint or the Weekend Warrior Challenge. The Super Sprint distance incorporates a 400-metre swim, a 13.3-kilometre bike ride and a 2.9-kilometre run. It's one of the highlights of the Blenheim Palace Triathlon, which prides itself on being an event for novices. The 2023 event saw more than 70% of the participants compete in a triathlon for the first time. Also growing in popularity is the Weekend Warrior Challenge, which offers athletes the opportunity to push beyond the conventional distance offered at triathlons. It challenges participants to compete as many consecutive triathlons as they can over the two-day event. The current record for the Weekend Warrior stands at 11 sprint triathlons across the 2 days, which added up to 8,250 metres of swimming, 217.8 kilometres of cycling and 59.4 kilometres of running. Participants hoping to take part in the sprint distance, which is a 750-metre swim, a 19.8-kilometre bike ride and a 5.4-kilometre run, still have the opportunity to compete on Sunday, June the 2nd, with places remaining for the distance alongside the sprint team relay or super sprint. Andy Taylor, the race director for the Blenheim Palace Triathlon, said, "Last year we saw nearly 5,000 people enter for the event, and we are hoping for a bumper turnout this year." A reminder that the latest COVID vaccination is now available. COVID-19 Spring Booster. If you're eligible, book now. Everyone aged 75 and over, people aged 6 months plus with weakened immune system, older adults in a residential care home. If you're eligible, look out for a letter or a text from the NHS or visit bit.ly/springbooster24 or telephone the COVID booking line on telephone number 119.
Adults in Oxford are more active than the average person in the South East, new figures have revealed. Sport England said its Active Live survey shows 2 million more people are exercising regularly compared to 2016. However, it also shows long-standing inequalities remain, with those living in deprived areas still less likely to be active. The figures from the survey show 76% of 501 respondents aged over 16 in Oxford said they were active in the year to November, exercising for more than 2.5 hours a week, up from 74% the year before. This was one of the best rates in South East, where an average 66% of people regularly did a physical activity. The levels of activity across England remained stable since the previous survey in 21-22, with 29.5 million people meeting the Chief Medical Officer's guidelines of doing 150 minutes or more of moderate intense physical activity a week, equivalent to 63% of the adult population. The Institute for Public Policy Research pointed at a growing divide in activity levels based on where someone lives. Stephen Frost, Principal Research Fellow at the think tank, said, "Last year, a third of people in the most deprived neighbourhoods are considered inactive, compared to a fifth of those in the least deprived. The number of people considered active in the most deprived areas has dropped by 2.5% in the last 7 years." He added, Across the regions, we're seeing some signs of growth in physical activity, but generally only in the places that were already doing well. While in the West Midlands and the North East, it's barely changed in terms of the number of active people in the last 7 years. If anything speaks to the failure of levelling up, it's the inability to address these inequalities in access to healthy places between UK's communities. The figure also show 8% of adults in Oxford said they were fairly active, exercising between 30 and 149 minutes a week. Meanwhile, 16% said they were inactive, up from 14% the year before and from 15% in 2015-16. Councillor Liz Green, chairwoman of the Local Government Association's Culture, Tourism and Sport Board, said physical inactivity has a detrimental impact on personal health and the wider economy. We need to tackle the inequalities within our communities, which affect access to adults based on their location, wealth, age, ethnicity and gender, she added. She said access to public leisure centres and green spaces is key to get more adults active. Tim Hollingsworth, Chief Executive of Sport England, said, through intelligent and targeted investment, it is possible to increase activity levels and impact positively on people's lives. He added, at the moment, how likely you are to be active depends too much on your bank balance and your postcode. That's why we will continue to target our investment in places where it can make the biggest difference and on the groups who have the most to gain.
The Oxford Mail and Radley College are pleased to launch Bright Ideas, a new competition celebrating creativity in Oxfordshire. They are asking children in Year 4 and 5 from local primary schools to unlock their imagination and create a response to the theme of keys. The celebratory judge is Oxford-born Jamie Lang, who attended Radley College. Jamie, who famously appeared on Made in Chelsea and Strictly Come Dancing, now runs several of his own businesses, including the much-loved sweet company Candy Kittens. Earlier this year, he was announced as the new host of BBC Radio 1's afternoon show. Jamie Lang said, "It's a tremendous honour to be asked to judge this amazing competition. Children have the best ideas, and I'm so pleased that the Oxford Times and my old school are teaming up to champion creativity in my hometown of Oxford. I'm looking for imagination, talent and flair, and I can't wait to see all the entries. Children can submit whatever feels most personal or appropriate to them. They may wish to write a story, a poem or a song, make a video, a design project, artwork or a game as their entry. Shortlisted entries will be invited to a presentation morning at Radley College on Saturday, June the 29th, when the winner will receive a trophy and a £100 voucher. The competition is open to primary school children in years 4 and 5.
Hundreds of thousands of pounds will be spent on resurfacing roads in Oxford city centre, which has been described as being in a dreadful condition. Oxfordshire County Council plans to spend approximately £600,000 for repair works for both Cornmarket Street and Queen Street in Oxford, with the resurfacing programme expected to take place in the summer. The repairs will involve replacement and refurbishment of paving blocks on the paths using like-for-like materials where possible. Susanna Pressel, a county councillor for the Jericho and Osney division, said, "The road surfaces in Queen Street and Cornmarket Street have been in a truly dreadful state for many months. Both walking and cycling, when it's allowed, in those streets is now an unpleasant experience with many trip hazards. What on earth must all our visitors think of us? I've asked the County Council many times to repair and resurface the roads, but in vain until now." Ms Pressel raised the question on planned works to the streets at a full County Council meeting on April the 16th. Addressing the query, Highways Chief Andrew Gant said, "Extensive repair works are planned for both Cornmarket Street and Queen Street in this financial year. Works are expected to take place this summer, beginning on Queen Street. The project duration will be between 9 and 12 weeks, depending on conditions and external factors. Since we're replacing the channel curbing with the same materials used in the original scheme, the start dates are dependent on the delivery of these specialist materials from abroad. When asked for his thoughts on Miss Pressall's claims, Mr. Gant said, "Yes, I do think they're in a dreadful state, and I'm very glad we're doing something about it." Alex Hollingsworth, who's ward city councillor for the Carfax and Jericho area, said, "I think when you've got well-used streets, it's important to keep them in good condition. I'm really pleased to see the council is doing this. There are lots of building works on Corn Market especially, and so it's important to do regular repairs." The county works are part of a planned programme carried out every year to fix issues on the highway network. An Oxfordshire County Council spokesman has confirmed the authority intends to minimise disruption to pedestrians and others where possible. He added, "Where work requires a road closure, this will take place out of hours, with a small diversion route taking traffic around Speedwell Street. This has already been discussed and agreed with bus companies. Localised repairs to slabbing and curbs will be completed within small sectional areas, allowing for access at all times where possible."
A secret pizza shipping container has returned to Oxford after a long time absence. Pizza 1889 is a national pizzeria chain which has locations in London, Bristol, Cambridge and Templar Square shopping centre in Cowley. The eatery is interestingly located in a sky blue shipping container, making it very unique, though it is well hidden away in Cowley. It has been closed throughout this year with no life shown at the shipping container for months, but the restaurant reopened last week. A spokesman for the company said, "Oxford, we're back. We're ready to start serving you delicious, authentic Italian street pizza." The Pizza 1889 brand is committed to providing its customers with authentic tasting pizza, even using ingredients sourced from Italy. "We're committed to making great pizza, and we make sure our suppliers are too. The fior di latte mozzarella we use comes from the Latteria Sorrentia in Naples, where it was developed specifically for topping pizza. Following in great Italian pizza making tradition requires craft, a love of fresh food and a whole lot of theatre. When you visit us, not only will we make your pizza by hand in front of your eyes, but we'll give you a slice of Italy to take away too." The Oxford spot is open from noon till 9 p.m. on Wednesday through to Sunday, but is closed on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Students have labelled the University of Oxford as inaccessible for the working class after event tickets were priced at £446. Pembroke College, founded in 1624, is charging £446 per person for its 400th birthday ball, which means a ticket is more expensive than the average monthly student rent in the UK. Furious students at the institution believe that poorer people are being priced out of Oxford's events, including formals and balls. Chloe Pomfret studies human sciences at undergraduate level and took to social media to reveal the price of the college's anniversary bash. The 20-year-old was left homeless at the age of 16 years old after becoming estranged from her family. On X, she posted the price of tickets and said, "You wonder why Oxford is so inaccessible for working class students. £446 for one college ball." The St Catherine College student also revealed there had previously been lower prices, especially for students, but these separate tickets still cost £196 and had sold out. She said, "It's still surreal when I walk out into Oxford. You see all these big fancy buildings and it's just a whole other world. You go to formals where they're serving you food. I have a cleaner that comes and cleans my rooms and I just think, oh, what on earth?" Several social media users responded to the students' post in shock and disgust at the prices being charged by Pembroke College. "That's ridiculous," said one user. "I'm a member of a private members club And even factoring in the membership fee, it doesn't work out at these kinds of prices for formal events. Another added, whilst commenters are right that nobody has to attend anything, technically, high price points serve to alienate and other students who might already be feeling out of place. It's certainly not a conversation to shut down without wider reflection. My goodness, that's a month's rent right there, said a third commenter. Miss Pomfret revealed that her monthly rent at the college in which she is currently studying is £840 per month. In her spare time, she co-chairs Class Act Oxford, which is a campaign for working class, low income, first generation, state comprehensive educated students, care leavers and estranged students at the university. My tweet from the other week perfectly captures the issue with college disparities, she added. College's unique cultures and communities aren't the issue. It's problems like this, where access to support is unequal. The Oxford Mail has approached the University of Oxford and Pembroke College for comment.
Jeremy Clarkson's girlfriend has revealed she was close to ending up with a criminal record in the latest series of Clarkson's Farm. According to National Reports, Lisa Hogan spoke of how she got into hot water for selling non-local produce on their farm. Mr. Clarkson and Miss Hogan will star once again in the hit Prime Video series Clarkson's Farm next month, when the third season is released. The 63-year-old former Top Gear host is continuing to manage his diddly squat farm in Chipping Norton, alongside Caleb and Gerald Cooper. Miss Hogan admitted she had a serious conversation with land agent and advisor Charlie Ireland about what produce could be sold. This topic was so serious that she learned the shop could only sell items made within 16 miles of the farm, and if she didn't comply, she could face a criminal record. Charlie had to have a serious conversation with me and say that I could end up with a criminal record if I didn't comply, she said, as per national reports. When you first catch up with us again, the restaurant has been forced to close down by the local council. We're allowed to keep our gourmet food van so that we can cook the meat from our animals, which is great, but it would have been nice to continue the restaurant because it's a stunning spot. A famous TikTok wine connoisseur has gone viral for completing the London Marathon with a boozy twist. Wine connoisseur Tom Gilby, a self-described unwavering passion for wine, which shines through in his many TikToks. He also has a passion for running, so decided to raise funds for the Sobel House Hospice in Headington, which helped look after his mother. But of course it wasn't any old marathon he was attempting to tackle, it was a wine marathon. At 5.5 million views on Twitter, Tom went viral for tasting 25 wines on the colossal 26.2 mile route. He got 7 fully correct, 4 wrong and 14 mostly right. He's so far raised over £10,000 for Sobel House Hospice. His Just Giving page reads, "Thanks for taking the time to visit my Just Giving page. I'm running the London Marathon to raise money for the wonderful team at Sobel House Hospice, who nursed and cared for my dear mother in her last few days. I will be blind tasting one wine every mile, aiming to guess the grape variety and country for 26 wines and not die doing it. Tom Gilby has spent his whole working life in wine," his website states.
Abista Brewery is closing its doors after 6 years due to cost increases and significant disruption over the past few years. The Wriggly Monkey Brewery announced its closure recently and urged people to support independent businesses. In a statement, the business said, "It is with immense sadness that we must call time on the Wriggly Monkey Brewery. We would like to thank all of our customers, friends and followers for the support over the last 6 years. It's been an incredible journey with amazing highs and our fair share of lows. Unfortunately, despite all the incredible efforts of our team, we cannot keep the pedal flat for any longer. The brewing industry and the wider hospitality sector has faced unprecedented cost increases and significant disruption over the last few years that have challenged the brewery's viability going forwards. Times are tough out there, and the pubs, bottle shops and small independent breweries really do need your support. We all need to leave those beers in the aisle at the supermarket and call around the local breweries, pubs and independent shops. Your support is key and is always much appreciated by them all. Staff thanked their customers for all the support over the years and said it has meant so much.
A campaign has been launched to raise the final £25,000 needed for a transformation project at an art gallery. Modern Art Oxford has launched the Art Happens fundraising effort as it looks to reach £2 million to fund a transformation of the gallery's ground and lower ground floor spaces. Since 1965, the gallery has been a pioneering figure in the country's contemporary art scene, showcasing both established and upcoming artists. However, the Victorian building has reached its capacity and can no longer meet demand. The funds secured through the campaign will ensure the plans created by award-winning architect David Cohn are fully realised and that the gallery becomes an accessible and inviting space for everyone, irrespective of their age, background or abilities. Donors, in return, will have the choice of a variety of rewards, such as artist-designed merchandise, an invite to an exclusive event to commemorate the opening of the new spaces, a personalised art making workshop, or a contemporary art tour in London with the gallery's director, Mr. Hobson. Paul Hobson said, "We're so close to realising our transformational vision for a major redesign of our ground floor public areas. If we raise this money, we'll be able to fully equip and furnish our public spaces to enable the best possible welcome and creative offer for our diverse communities."
The construction of a world-class concert hall in Oxford has reached an important milestone. The Stephen A. Schwarzman Centre for Humanities is being funded by gifts totalling £185 million from the philanthropist and businessman Mr. Schwarzman. He is the chairman, chief executive and co-founder of the Blackstone investment firm. A small topping out ceremony took place to mark the erection of the highest part of the building at the Radcliffe Observatory Quarter site on Woodstock Road on Friday, May the 3rd. Construction of the building is well underway and it's scheduled to open in autumn 2025. The centre, designed by Hopkins Architects, will be home to a 500-seat concert hall and a 250-seat theatre. Speaking at the meeting in 2022, where the plans were unanimously approved, William White, Professor of Architectural History at the University of Oxford, described it to councillors as one of the most exciting building projects the university has ever undertaken. He said, "For the first time in its 800-year existence, this is a building built by the University of Oxford, which is intended to be open to the public. Every other building was built to exclude, but this is a building which will only work if we can attract people to the performance venues." The building would be accessible to the public every day between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. The 500-seat hall has been designed to provide world-class acoustics for performances by ensembles and chamber orchestras of up to 60 musicians, and would also be suitable for a small symphony orchestra. The 250-seat lecture theatre would be used for large lectures during term time, but would also be able to accommodate not only student-led dramatic performances, but also professional plays and theatre. The plans were also largely approved by Oxford Preservation Trust, who said the development is an individual high-quality building on a surprising scale. The Oxford Preservation Trust said it was fully supportive of the new humanities building and welcomed the introduction of these new uses aimed at creating a place which draws people in rather than keeping them out, as so many college and university buildings and sites can do. In addition to the concert hall and theatre, the building will also include an 89-seat lecture and film screening facility, a school engagement centre, and a bait collection of musical instruments and library. Alex Hollingsworth, the City Council's Cabinet Member for Planning and Housing Delivery, said, "I think it's potentially a huge asset to the city." Oxford's music community welcomed the prospect of a new concert hall, in addition to University Church, the Sheldonian, Exeter College Chapel, other churches and the concert hall at St Edward's School. Lindsay Sanderson, director of the City of Oxford Orchestra, said, "We're spoilt for choice, but it's wonderful. The more the merrier. It will be fantastic. I'm very much looking forward to going there when it opens." It will not, however, become home to the City of Oxford Orchestra. She said, "I think we'll always stick to the Sheldonian. I'm sure it will be wonderful, but we love the Sheldonian. I know the seats aren't very comfortable, but it's such a wonderful building designed by Christopher Wren with so much history attached to it, and it's just so much part of our lives, really." The centre will also boost teaching and research in humanities at the university and bring together seven faculties: the New Institute for Ethics in AI, the Oxford Internet Institute, and a new humanities library at the former Radcliffe Infirmary Hospital, which closed in 2007. Author Sir Philip Pullman set his Dark Material trilogy in Oxford, with the fictional Jordan College on the site of what will become the centre. He has also backed the building, saying, "The Schwarzman Centre for the Humanities will be an exciting and distinguished addition to the architecture of this beautiful city, and what it embodies about the central place of humanities in the world of learning needs demonstrating now more than ever. I look forward to seeing it flourish."
A cake shop at the Covered Market is leaving after 38 years, after bosses blame traffic conditions in Oxford. The cake shop in the historic market will close on May the 11th and reopen in new premises in Whitney on May the 18th. Over the years, the shop has become a favourite with visitors to the market, who love to take photographs of its specially designed cakes and buy them. But bosses say the location is no longer the best place for them to sell their cakes, and added that traffic restrictions were making it difficult for them to operate. A spokesman for the cake shop said, "We're relocating to larger, bright new space at 3 Mill Walk in the vibrant town of Whitney, with an enhanced bakery offering. Our new location will have free parking outside our front door, is easily accessible from Oxford, and will have an expanded range of fresh artisan breads, pastries and bespoke cakes available daily." As part of the new operation, the cake shop is linking up with the Heritage Bakery to broaden its offering. The owners said a future in the Covered Market was not viable, as it does not offer traders of our type the same benefits as it did in years past. The spokesman added, "We have experienced problems with access, challenges around the zero emission zone, excessive structural issues, and high levels of rent relative to footfall. Unfortunately, this part of Oxford no longer represents good value for money." While the council may claim footfall is strong, this is falsely representative for businesses of our nature. It's evident to us that the footfall in the market is driven towards the take-and-go food vendors or cafe-type businesses. The council master plan is driving away many of the original trade traditional vendors. Tom Bridgman, Oxford City Council Executive Director of Development, said, "They have been very popular and there was always a crowd pressed up against the window to see their artistry. The owner has told us that they want to consolidate their business and move into larger premises in Whitney. We really wanted the cake shop to stay in the Covered Market, but sadly we don't have a unit large enough for their needs."
Former Prime Minister Boris Johnson was turned away from a polling station in Oxfordshire after forgetting his ID, according to reports. The Conservative politician, who owns a Grade 2 listed house in Brightwell Manor, was initially turned away when he did not have sufficient proof of identity on polling day for the Police and Crime Commissioner election in South Oxfordshire. One source told the Oxford Mail Mr Johnson had been refused entry to a polling station in the village of Brightwell cum Sotwell. Reports have stated Mr Johnson later returned with the correct ID and voted Conservative. It comes as Mr Johnson had made photo ID a requirement as part of the Elections Act, which he introduced while he was in Number 10 in 2022. The Conservative politician, who studied at Oxford University, bought the £3.8 million Brightwell Manor with a three-sided moat. Mr Johnson, his wife Carrie, and their two young children, Wilfred and Romy, have been spotted around the village since their move in May 2023.
Oxford Brookes Business School students have been bridging the digital generation gap by sharing their expertise with older adults. Inspired by a research project led by Oxford Brookes Business School professors Sarah Quinton and Daniela Traveri-Gennari, which explored how older individuals use photo sharing to combat loneliness, the business school started termly workshops. The aim of these workshops was to empower older people to engage with digital platforms. Launched in 2022 in collaboration with the Oxford 50 Plus Network, the workshops help participants navigate digital platforms. They cover basic online tasks such as shopping, email attachments, bill payments, ticket bookings and photo sharing on social media. Participants have seen tangible benefits, such as learning how to download apps, which help them navigate Oxford's bus services better using their mobile devices. One participant, Di Shaw, has also learned how to text, improving her communication with friends, particularly those in hospital. In recognition of the students' work, a celebratory event sponsored by the British Gerontology Society was held at Oxford Brookes. The students received certificates for their participation and heard from some of the older community attendees about the benefits they received from the workshops. Thames Valley Police gave talks on digital security, while Charity Aspire discussed their efforts to address digital poverty and to provide refurbished devices. Lisa Hale, Deputy Associate Dean, Education and Student Experience at Oxford Brookes Business School, said, "The digital skills workshops that are led and run by our students and volunteers are truly transformative. They are also a wonderful opportunity for our local senior community and students to interact on the Brookes Headington campus." Margaret Simpson, Chair of the Over 50s Network, said, "IT is already here. But if older people can't access it and are aware of how to use the technology, they miss out on so much. Without access to information, people can become isolated, and the digital skills workshops provided by Oxford Brookes makes digital technology more inclusive." Kasim Lukwego, an MSc management student involved in the workshops, added, "The opportunity to lead the digital skills workshop and work closely with fellow students has been invaluable. Not only have I been able to share my knowledge and expertise, but I've also learned from the diverse perspectives and experiences of those that I've had the privilege to engage with. Building connections, fostering collaboration, and witnessing the collective growth and development of both myself and others have been the highlights of this experience." A charity has been celebrating the achievements of its trainees with learning disabilities and autism. Yellow Submarine, which runs cafes in Oxford and Whitney, celebrated trainees' growth and hard work while training with an awards ceremony. The charity gives young people with learning disabilities the chance to work in their life-changing cafes, bridging the gap between education and employment. The trainees gain real-life work experience in a safe environment and receive individualised training aimed at increasing their life skills, boosting confidence and fostering independence. As they graduate, they take on new opportunities, including paid employment with Sodexo, Molly's and Tesco. Sophie Bradley, Enterprise Development Manager, said, "We are incredibly proud of our trainees and their accomplishments. Their determination and perseverance have been truly inspiring." Sleep-deprived householders have hit out at overnight drilling in Botley Road as part of major work on Oxford's railway station. And they have the backing of their MP, Leila Moran, who described Network Rail's noise levels as unacceptable. The night work apparently involves driving 40 piles into the ground for the foundations of a new platform. Those living on surrounding streets say the overnight drilling work by Network Rail started on Sunday, April the 14th, with Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran describing the levels of disruption as unacceptable. Network Rail has been carrying out works as part of a £160 million upgrade for the city's rail station since April last year. These improvements include replacing the rail bridge, moving utility cables in Botley Road so that a new western entrance to the station can be built. A Network Rail spokesman said, "We're sorry for any disturbance our work is causing. As part of our multi-million pound project to deliver a bigger and better station and railway for Oxford, we're currently drilling long steel piles into the ground to form the foundations of the station's new platform. Unfortunately, this is noisy work, but we're doing everything we can to keep disruption to a minimum."
A new Oxford party, dubbed Anti-LTN, came under fire from an MP and other senior politicians days before the local election, prompting members to describe it as a coordinated political attack. Labour MP for Oxford East, Annalise Dodds, issued an open letter to candidates at the Independent Oxford Alliance, IOA, along with Labour leader of the City Council, Susan Brown, expressing concern about appalling behaviour from a number of senior members. The behaviour referenced includes the chairwoman of the party apparently promoting conspiracy theories which encourage people to take dangerous drugs. It also singled out another member describing London Mayor Sadiq Khan as an ethnic Asian Muslim mayor who is opposed to the native Caucasian, Protestant and Catholic ethnic people, preferring diversity. The second comment was made by Barton and Sandhills ward candidate Shaka Artwell, who has previously described himself as one of His Majesty's African heritage subjects. LTNs were introduced in East Oxford in May 2022 with the aim of making streets safer, but they have since proved controversial and been blamed for increasing congestion. Addressing party members in the open letter, Ms. Dodds and Ms. Brown said, "It appears that a number of senior Oxford independents have expressed views that would shock the vast majority of Oxford residents. We're therefore demanding that you distance yourself from what is reported and explain whether you are willing to remain a member of a political party where this behaviour is tolerated." A number of other councillors have also taken to social media, such as Emily Kerr of the St Mary's ward, to suggest the promotion of fringe viewpoints was concerning. Responding to the criticism, IOA party chairwoman Anne Gwinnett said, "It does seem like a coordinated political attack. Annalise Dodds and the Labour Party are trying to distract attention from their foolish policies in Oxford and their arrogant, undemocratic approach to implementing them." This comes as St Mary's ward IOA candidate John Skinner, prior to the attack, had claimed a Green Party leaflet issued in the ward was lies and libelous. The leaflet said, "One candidate for the Alliance had confidently proclaimed that there was no climate emergency and shared misleading conspiracy theories about COVID vaccines." Mr. Skinner said it seemed as if these suggestions referred to him, being the only IOA candidate in the ward. Chris Jarvis, leader of the Green Group on the City Council, said, "Every statement in our leaflets has been accurate. The comments from the Independent Oxford Alliance deputy leader John Skinner refers to were in a leaflet printed and distributed in March and did not refer to him. The leaflet drew people's attentions to the social media activity of one individual who was listed on the Independent Oxford Alliance's website and in their press release as one of the party's candidates at the time the leaflet was printed.
The Abbey Road studios have welcomed many of the biggest names in rock and pop. And now, the globally famous London recording studio, immortalised by the Beatles, will play host to an Oxfordshire music festival, which is relocating from the country this summer. Kite Festival has taken place in the grounds of the Grade 2 listed Kirtlington Park, near Kidlington, for the past 2 years after launching in 2022. However, organisers have confirmed the festival will this year take place at the Abbey Road Studios. The festival will take place at the North London Studios on October 5 and 6. However, planning is said to be already underway for its return to Oxfordshire next year, insisted the festival team. In a statement this week, Kite Festival said, "We're very excited that together with the Abbey Road Studios, we're going to put on the Kite Weekend of Ideas and Music at Abbey Road on October 5 and 6. This means Kite will not be happening at Kirtlington Park this summer, but planning is already underway for our return in 2025. Thank you for your patience and for helping us get Kite off the ground. You've helped us build a festival we love and believe in. Together with Abbey Road Studios, we are working on a weekend of inspirational voice, untold stories, bold ideas, and iconic music acts. We hope you'll join us in the studios where history gets made." Originally a 9-bedroom house built in 1829, Abbey Road Studios was purchased in 1928 by the Gramophone Company. It has been used as a recording studio since Sir Edward Elgar conducted a performance there in 1931. And has welcomed the likes of Radiohead, Amy Winehouse and Adele. Most famously, the Beatles recorded most of their music at Abbey Road, with their 11th studio album released in 1979 named after the venue. The building, along with a zebra crossing outside, was given Grade 2 listed status in 2010. No lineup has been announced for the Kite Festival yet, but it has attracted some well-known bands in the past.
A husband and wife team have described the reaction from the community to their new Lebanese takeaway as amazing. Daniel Morris and his wife, Alyssa Hassanier Morris, launched their home-cooked business, Alyssa's Kitchen, in January after having the idea of starting a small business together last year. The Lebanese takeaway is based in Stanlake near Whitney, and is run entirely by the duo. All of the food is freshly cooked and homemade from their home kitchen. Mr. Morris described it as not a traditional takeaway service. Orders have to be placed by Tuesday at midnight each week, with the delivery service running every Friday and Saturday. He said, "It's like having a chef do your cooking for you, and then it's hand-delivered. It's a whole experience." The Google and Facebook reviews have just been fantastic. The menu changes weekly and caters for vegans and vegetarians, and all of the supplies are sourced directly from Lebanon or within the Oxford and Whitney area. The launch event in January welcomed 75 people at Oxford Downs Cricket Club with tasting dishes of authentic Lebanese food. The pair are aiming to educate the community about traditional Lebanese food through their business. Mrs. Hassanier Morris said, "The food all goes well together. It's a family meal. Everyone can dip in and mix and match. I cook from the heart and I'm happy people are enjoying it."
An Oxford United fan was left stunned after receiving what he described as an abusive letter through the post following his support for the club's new stadium proposals. Youth supporter Charlie Smith backed the plans for a new stadium at a site called the Triangle on the edge of Kidlington on the Charwell District Council online planning portal. The consultation process means publication of participants' addresses is a legal requirement. This left the football fan open to receive an anonymous letter, which has been described as unacceptable and completely uncalled for. The letter, which purports to have been written by a local resident, reads, "Your comments on the planning application show that you are a total expletive deleted with no concept of how to keep your large nose out of someone else's community affairs. Local councillors have a duty to their local social communities, not to commercial enterprises. Your expletive deleted football team is owned by a bunch of corrupt foreigners whose governments are busy burning down their own countries. They don't give a flying flip about the UK, still less about your personal well-being. They care about lining their pockets with your tax cash. Stop being a dimwit and pipe down." The letter was signed by someone who actually lives near the Triangle. Mr. Smith said he was left stunned when he opened the letter sent to his address. He added, "I couldn't believe somebody would go so out of their way to send such a childish letter." Responding to the letter, the Oxford United Supporters Panel said in a statement, "So disappointed and upset to see that one of our supporters received this. This sort of bullying and racist abuse is not tolerated at our football club and should not be tolerated in wider society." Liam Walker, Conservative councillor for Hamborough and Minster Lovell, has since raised concerns with Charwell District Council over the names and addresses of those who have commented on being made public and have asked for them to be removed.
Plans to reopen a South Oxfordshire railway station have hit a breakthrough, say supporters from a campaign group. The Wantage and Grove station closed in December of 1964 as part of the Beeching Cuts, a series of major national route closures and service changes. A campaign group entitled Wantage and Grove Station Supporters Group has since launched efforts to reopen the station. Group founder Andy Holding has been campaigning for years to reopen the station and believes that he has made a breakthrough. After recently holding talks with four train operators, he believes the response is positive, with one of the companies stating they would like to serve the area. One train operator wants to serve Grove Station now, with others not saying no to serving Grove Station, revealed Andy. "This is a really positive step, along with a strategic outline business case study. I'm chuffed to bits at this news. But there's a long way to go before I run around Wantage and Grove jumping up and down. They've said there are some constraints, but these can be overcome. I have to keep it confidential for now, as they will be in discussions with the SOBC study, but I can say it's an open access operator." The 52-year-old held an online poll this month to ask locals whether or not they would like to see the railway station reinstated. As many as 1,752 people wanted the station to reopen, while 130 were against, meaning 93% were in favour. The population of the area has grown substantially since the station's closure in the 1960s, and Andy believes that this is a vital reason why it needs to return. "I'm very concerned about the poor infrastructure in our area, so this is another reason for campaigning for a station," he added. When Grove Station closed in 1964, the population of Wantage and Grove was 7,794, according to population figures from Oxfordshire Libraries. Since then, the population of Grove, Wantage and East Challow is 34,797, which is an increase of 347%. The catchment area for southwest Oxfordshire is 81,000 currently, but this is projected to increase to 94,000 by 2030. Andy remains hopeful that the station will return, especially given the latest meetings with train operators, but knows that there is a long track ahead. "As the area is the second fastest growing community in Oxfordshire, it's vital we have a station, as the transport infrastructure will struggle to cope with additional traffic congestion, he concluded. At the moment, it's all looking good, but there's still a long way to go before we receive any approval from the Department for Transport and Office for Roads and Rail. The Lord Lieutenant of Oxfordshire has made her first visit to a science facility in Harwell. Marjorie Glasgow, who is the King's personal representative for the county, visited the National Synchrotron Diamond Light Source, a particle accelerator. In her role as Lord Lieutenant, she conducts royal duties and champions the county's businesses and charitable organisations. Ms Glasgow said, "It's been truly insightful to see behind the covers at the facility and talk to some of the scientists about their work. I've already been impressed by Diamond's role cementing the UK's place as a science superpower. The facility also provides significant jobs for our country's most talented researchers, giving them the best opportunities to make major breakthroughs across a wide range of disciplines, from structural biology to advanced materials and battery technologies." The Lord Lieutenant, founder and CEO of a clean energy company, was welcomed by Diamond CEO Gianluigi Botton and visited several of the facility's 34 beam lines. Mr. Botton said, "We are so proud of what our scientists and users are achieving at Diamond and delighted to have the opportunity to show the Lord Lieutenant some of what is being achieved. This is a major investment drive in cutting-edge facilities funded by the government through UK Research and Innovation Science and Technology Research Council, together with Wellcome, one of the world's largest biomedical charities."
Knife campaigners are calling for all Oxford taxis to stock life-saving bandages, as it is revealed that the new fleet of electric vehicles does not have them. Black cabs in Oxford receive military-grade emergency bandages that can help prevent someone from bleeding to death in a mass handout in 2021. However, the secretary of the City of Oxford Licensed Taxi Cab Association, Sajjad Shan, said, "A significant number of cab drivers in new electric vehicles are now without the bandages." The Oxford Mail met with Uffington-based charity Repaid Emergency Bandages to hand out the first packs to the new electric fleet of taxis. Rapaid displays were put in the window of taxis to show the public or emergency services they could flag them down and utilise the kit in the event of a trauma or major incident involving knife crime. The bandages are the same as those that founder Alex Chivers, a former Wiltshire Police firearms officer and veteran, used to carry around in the army while in Iraq and Afghanistan. Mr. Khan said, "Our cabs are on the road 24/7. In the unfortunate event of a serious medical emergency, the cab can be flagged by any member of the public to provide the bandages before the emergency services arrive. Cab drivers are very proud to be supporting this initiative. Our cabs are in and out of key locations across Oxford both day and night. We can be found outside bars and clubs where often serious accidents can occur. We will be carrying these badges for the public and supporting Rapaid to help bolster and support community safety. We're waiting on Rapaid to provide all of our fleet with these bandages. A significant number of our drivers have changed their cabs to electric and would require these bandages as soon as possible. But knife crime is still very, very rare," according to Thames Valley Police's chief constable. "The regional force has issued statistics for the year April the 1st, 2023 to March the 31st, 2024, which show knife crime has dropped by 10.8% from 1,239 incidents last year to 1,105 this year." Chief Constable Jason Hogg said this figure was the one he had been most pleased to see change on the latest set of crime statistics. "Knife crime has been a priority for the force over the past 18 months," he said. "We have developed a really sophisticated approach in tackling knife crime." However, he said he understood that despite knife crime being statistically lower, people don't necessarily feel safer due to the high profile of recent incidents across Oxfordshire. We tend to share negative stories rather than positive stories, he said. So what I think we can do is to make sure that we're getting the message out there that very often they're not random attacks. So we say they usually involve people who know each other. They tend to be isolated incidents, and I think we need to do a little bit more to get those positive messages out there, that knife crime is still very, very rare indeed. I think we need to do more at promoting some of the positive. I think people know what we're doing and that they are reassured when we take a balanced approach. As well as knife crime reducing, the number of knife crime-related arrests has also decreased from 859 arrests last year to 755 arrests this year. He concluded, "It's been a bit of a journey that we've been on, but all that hard work does, I do feel, as though it's paying off." To the delight of Miss Van Camp, curator of Northern European art at the Ashmolean, and following the journey from Antwerp, of scores of priceless drawings have now left Belgium, the second city, to take up residence in the Ashmolean. They've been loaned for the Ashmolean's ambitious new show, Bruegel to Rubens, Great Flemish Drawings. The exhibition will unite work by the Flemish masters from Antwerp with those held in collections here in Oxford, treating visitors to an unparalleled opportunity to see about 120 of the most outstanding drawings from the 16th and 17th centuries on show together for the first time. More than 30 of them will be on display for the first time, including some which have only recently been discovered or acquired. I know a lot of curators say this, but this really will be a once-in-a-lifetime show, says Anne. Many of the pictures in this show will never have been seen together, and because of their fragility and light sensitivity, some have been in the dark for years and can't be shown again for a long time, so it is unlikely to happen again. The show, which runs to June the 23rd, boasts 69 drawings from Antwerp, together with about 50 from the Ashmolean's collection and a few pictures and books from Christchurch and the Bodleian Libraries. And now, thanks to the generosity of those in Antwerp, we are able to share this, the greatest collection of drawings by Flemish artists in the world. It's a great opportunity which really can only happen once in a lifetime. Bruegel to Rubens, Great Flemish Drawings, is at the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford until June the 23rd.
Pedestrianisation of a city centre street has gone ahead despite concerns being raised about the impact on traders. Market Street in Oxford, which is located next to the Covered Market, has undergone surfacing works to include wider walkways, new cycle racks, and added outdoor seating. Some traders at the Covered Market, which is celebrating its 250th anniversary this year, previously expressed concern when news of the trial emerged. Luciana Giroska, who started the beer business Teardrop 5 years ago and the wine bar Market Cellar Door 2 years ago, said, "If there were less traffic concerns, the market would be booming more." Paul Lee, proprietor of Covered Arts and Framing Surface, added, "Most of our deliveries come from London and the north of England, and fragile products such as glass lengths of timber need to be safely received." Not all traders are against the move, with Graham MacDonald from the ice cream gelato store saying he thinks it's a great idea. Mr. MacDonald added, "There are difficulties with deliveries, whether there's this outside space or not, to be brutally honest. As long as the parking attendant is a little more tolerant of recognisable heavy goods vehicles, it should be fine. I think it's great for Oxford. A lot of people come and visit from Europe and they're used to cafes spilling out onto streets there." Alex Hollingsworth, City Councillor for the Carfax and Jericho Ward, added, "My initial thoughts are that it looks really nice. I think the delivery arrangements are obviously something that two councils and the Covered Market talk about all the time. there is always a balancing act to be had. When asked about general transport-related concerns expressed by traders in the area, Mr. Hollingsworth said he thought the vast majority of people shopping and visiting the covered market came on public transport or foot. City Council Cabinet Member for Zero Carbon Oxford and Climate Justice, Anna Railton, said, "The changes look really high quality and positive. There was lots and lots of engagement with traders before this semi-pedestrianisation was done, including surveys of how long vehicles were parked in spaces. I'm hopeful we can keep engaging with the various businesses to use the new space as effectively as possible. For example, working together across the market to time deliveries." A City Council spokesman said, "The pedestrian-friendly changes to Market Street aim to bring more people to this part of the city centre and make it easier for them to spend more time around the covered market. We've worked with stakeholders so that these benefits can be delivered without presenting unmanageable challenges for businesses. The street remains open for loading and to allow blue badge holders and taxis to drop off people at all times." He said reference to access was not relevant as the road was not being closed for loading. This is despite there being a reduction in loading bays as a result of the pedestrianisation.
The county's highways chief has defended newly approved traffic restrictions for an Oxford housing estate, despite householders claiming they are being punished. Oxfordshire County Council Cabinet Member for Transport Management, Andrew Gant, gave the green light to two tiger crossings, a zebra crossing, and no waiting at any time rules, and shared use cycle paths for Blackbird Lees at a meeting on Thursday morning. The parking restrictions will see double yellow lines introduced on both sides of Blackbird Lees Road, alongside new shared and segregated cycle paths. Defending the move, Mr. Gant said, "Relevant aspects of approval had happened years ago, and the scheme had planning permission, so the remit of his decision was quite narrow. As part of the council consultation, an unnamed Alan Close householder in Blackbird Lees said, 'Please don't make our lives any harder than you already have. It's so difficult trying to fulfil all my responsibilities and try and keep a job and caring duties. We already live on the edge of the city and it's already hard enough. Please stop punishing us. Why don't you go to Jericho and Wolvercote and introduce lots of restrictions there instead?" The highways chief insisted that the whole point of the scheme was to make life for those with caring duties much easier. Mr. Gant denied allegations the new traffic restrictions were a money-making scheme for the council, as they are being put forward by a developer. A spokesman for COSAT, the Coalition for Healthy Streets and Active Travel, said, "The scheme should be a lot better. We strongly support the parking controls, which are necessary to get the buses working. The cycle route is the problem. Access is poor from several directions. Most objectors in the council consultation did support the idea for a zebra crossing, but were specifically against the double yellow line restrictions and shared use cycle path for Blackbird Lees Road."
A counselling service based in Henley is looking to raise enough money to fund its services for a year. Riverside Counselling Service is aiming to gather £240,000 through its Be a Friend, Tell a Friend appeal. The appeal comes on the heels of a surge in demand for mental health services following the pandemic and the ongoing cost of living crisis. Last year, Riverside provided 1,379 counselling sessions to 76 people in Didcot and the surrounding areas. The charity does not receive any specific funding and offers reduced fee counselling to more than 90% of its clients in Didcot, with almost half of these clients paying between £1 and £10. Adrian Marsh, Chair of Trustees at Riverside Counselling, said the UK is currently in the grip of both a mental health crisis and a cost of living crisis. With mental health services within the NHS extremely stretched, and private counselling too expensive for many, there's a growing need for affordable counselling, which is what Riverside provide. However, our costs are also increasing and securing funding is becoming more and more competitive. One Riverside client said, "Riverside has been a wonderful service and hugely important to me over the past 10 months, helping me to navigate some really difficult times. The counselling sessions have been a weekly oasis of calm and reflection and have taught me to better manage my mental health outside of those sessions."
Oxford United chairman Grant Ferguson was proud to see the Ewes complete a turnaround from a relegation battle last season to clinching a playoff place this campaign. United needed a 3-0 win at Forest Green Rovers on April the 29th last year to ensure the club would maintain its Sky Bet League One status. Fast forward 12 months and the Ewes grabbed a top six spot after a 2-1 victory at Exeter City. Ferguson said, "It's a year since we stood at Forest Green. It's football, isn't it? You could not have written the script. It's so different to where we were last year. It was the elation that I'd felt, never felt before, but it was for avoiding relegation. And here we are celebrating making the playoffs and with a good chance of going further than that. We were looking for an improved season and we've done what we expected, if not more." Meanwhile, head coach Des Buckingham was happy to see his side reach the playoffs the true Oxford way, after sneaking into the top six on the final day of the season. Oxford United's win at Exeter City, combined with Lincoln City's defeat at home to Portsmouth, ensured United finished in the Sky Bet League One playoffs. With Barnsley drawing at home to Northampton Town, Buckingham's side were able to climb from seventh to fifth and set up a playoff semi-final clash against Peterborough United. Ewes head coach Buckingham said, "It feels good. It's the true Oxford way. We never make things easy, but we arrive not just into a playoff spot, but playing some really good football. We arrive full of confidence going into what will be two tough games against a good Peterborough side. There are three things. The first was to concentrate on our own game and not to worry about what's going on around you. I said pre-game that I wasn't concerned with how we were playing. I think the players now are very clear on what we're doing and how we do it, so there wasn't that uncertainty. We knew what we wanted to do, so that level of calmness was there. We'll enjoy this now because it has been a long, long season for everybody, but a season we now get to extend. As a season goes, it's been pretty turbulent with the manager changing. I just thank the players because they've stuck with it. They stuck with me and they've stuck together, more importantly. They're a good group of players and it's starting to come together now at a very exciting time of the season for everybody." Runners will take to the streets of Oxford for a massed 1 mile race to mark the 70th anniversary of Sir Roger Bannister's record-breaking 4 minute mile. Competitors of all abilities are being encouraged to join the so-called Bannister Miles, with a large community run through the city to the spot where Sir Roger completed his historic athletic feat, the running track at Iffley Road Sports Centre. The event on May the 6th has been organised jointly by the Oxford University Athletic Club and the University of Oxford, with backing from Oxfordshire County Council. Sir Roger's son, Thurston Bannister, will be among those celebrating his father's legacy. He said, "After retiring from competitive athletics, my father continually encouraged elite athletes and amateur runners of all ages. The track and community miles will be exciting to watch, and I'm sure many runners will find them so inspiring they will shatter their personal records and other records. From 9 a.m. on the day, runners will convene at St Aldate's, race down the high street, and finally sprint to the finish line on Iffley Road, where Sir Roger created history. The community mile is open to participants of all ages and abilities." Jared Martin, club captain of Oxford University Cross Country Club, said, "Oxford University Athletic Club and Oxford University Cross Country Club are extremely excited to host Bannister Miles for this special anniversary. From humble beginnings, club members have stewarded this event to becoming the premier mile race in the UK this year. For the City of Oxford and beyond, Bannister Miles offers an unparalleled opportunity to celebrate the benefits of sport. The day will also feature races and heats for athletes 9 years old and above, para-athletes and high-level amateur runners leading up to men's and women's elite miles. The University of Oxford's Vice-Chancellor, Professor Irene Tracy, said, "I grew up with a love of sport and remain a keen runner, committed to the transformative benefits of sport. Breaking the 4-minute mile barrier has endured as a defining achievement in sporting history. The Bannister Miles will be a fitting way to mark this legacy, achieved at the university 70 years ago, and the Bannister Community Mile through the streets of Oxford will be a fitting way to celebrate together with our community Roger's landmark achievements."
Thousands of people packed the streets of Oxford on the 1st of May for one of the city's oldest traditions. A crowd of 14,000 gathered below Magdalen College's Great Tower to mark the 2024 edition of May Morning. This attendance was only 2,000 people down from last year, which was the largest gathering the event has seen since 2017, due to it falling on a bank holiday. Locals flocked to High Street and Magdalen College to listen to the college's choir singing Hymnus Eucharisticus to welcome in the event at 6 a.m. on Wednesday morning. The traditional celebration of the coming of spring brought together Oxford's communities and people of all ages to enjoy dancing, singing and revelry. May Morning, which is now more than 500 years old, saw a crowd of thousands stretching from Long Wall Street to the Plain Roundabout. Traditional events and activities, including Morris dancing and folk singing, then took place across the city as the bell of the Great Tower rang out. Hotspots for this were Radcliffe Camera, Broad Street and High Street, as drummers, dancers and singers could also be found entertaining Oxford's folk. The May Morning event at Magdalen Bridge is organised by Oxford City Council on behalf of partners. These include Thames Valley Police, Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service, South Central Ambulance Service, Oxfordshire County Council and Magdalen College. Oxford City Council's Cultural Development Manager Paula Redway said, "May Morning is such a fantastic Oxford tradition and this year again saw a brilliant event for the city. It was wonderful to see thousands of residents and visitors celebrate the arrival of spring together. The choral performance was energetic and the contributions from Oxford's communities make the event extra special, from the artwork on Magdalen Bridge to the music and dance and food and drink providers who opened all around the city centre."
Oxford has quite a few pubs with large riverside gardens. Now the warm weather is returning after a seemingly endless winter, pub staff are welcoming customers back into their outdoor spaces. And while the Perch, the Trout, the Head of the River, the Victoria Arms in Old Marston and the Fishes in North Hinksey immediately spring to mind, there are other pubs not so well known for their gardens and outside spaces. You could call them secret gardens. Take, for instance, the Hollybush on Osney Island. It does have some outside space, but you can't really see it from the road. The same applies to the Rose and Crown in North Parade Avenue. From the front of the pub, there's no indication of any garden space. Other pubs with secret garden seating include the Jericho Tavern in Walton Street, the Harcourt Arms in Cranham Terrace, both popular music venues. The Harcourt Arms website promises something of a hidden gem in the city. Our secret beer garden offers a blissful spot for al fresco drinks in summer. Once found, never forgotten. The Jericho's website says, just a 5-minute walk from the old city gates of Oxford and a short stroll from the Oxford University Museum of Natural History and Port Meadow, the Jericho is the very definition of urban cool, mixing a stylish contemporary bar, classic pub features and a handful of quirky touches. Pop out to the back and you'll discover the pub's best kept secret, our spacious beer garden. No wonder this has been the home of live music and rock stars since the 1980s. You could also try the Turf Tavern off Holywell Street, which has a spacious outdoor patio. You'd be wise to duck when entering the Turf, as the ancient front door of this tavern is designed for smaller guests. The Turf Tavern is truly a hidden gem.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.